Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology, procurement and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those who are leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best known companies. The Digital Insight, disrupt, transform, evolve.
Welcome to another episode of the Digital Insight Bite Size. Now, if I said to you that CTOs could learn a lot from Team GB and their Olympic gold medal winning cycling team, would you believe me? Bear in mind, of course, that this was the same team that had only won one gold medal in 76 years, but then went on to win seven at the 2008 Beijing Olympics, and in the 14 years since then, have established themselves as a true powerhouse in Olympic cycling. Now, of course, there are many contributing factors to this continued success, but it all started from a simple belief from Sir David Brailsford, former performance director at Team GB Cycling. He set out with an approach where, rather than focusing on the entirety of what's possible, he looked at breaking the job down into actionable and achievable parts. A true blueprint for success. So how does this apply to CTOs and automation journeys? Our guest today, Terry Daniel, Operations Director at Trench's Law, believes that CTOs should take notes from Team GB when it comes to their approach to adopting automation. But before we strap in our cycling cleats and fasten our helmets, let's explore the broader automation conversation.
Within our sector, I would say not very well, to be brutally honest. And I think, you know, part of that is, you know, there's some big players in our space, and I've worked for two of them. So changing organizations of that size and scale, take a lot of time, take a lot of money, and also take a lot of it's very difficult to get buying across the piece. And there's also some sunk cost, usually material sunk cost, that people are reluctant to kind of throw away. We're in a really strong position because we're a young and relatively small company, although growing, you know, almost by the week, by the day. So we were in a strong position to kind of get on that journey and get on it quickly. But I think where we've managed to... It's not an all or nothing approach. We've just tried to chip away at little bits and pieces that we do in our process and automate those and then make sure that they, you know, connect together. So we can, it's bite-sized chunks, so you can get a relatively quick win, which helps people to buy into the process. So one of the very early ones, you know, the world that we work in is very data rich. It's very old fashioned. So the land registry is the number one source of data that we use. 50% of the data on corporate ownership on the land registry is wrong. So we were chasing our tails. You know, there's no email addresses stored on there, so everything's in written format. So, you know, I was forever spending, it felt like, thousands of pounds on ink cartridges for our printer. We had a person that was almost permanently in a queue at a post office dropping off sackfuls of letters. So the third thing was, you know, let's get a mailing house. Let's automate some of that. Let's get some, you know, we were doing mail merges, but let's get a bit more structure around that. And then immediately you can see, you know, the cost benefit, but a time benefit, and people are actually enjoying their work day because they're actually making a contribution. Not doing a mail merge and folding bits of paper and licking stamps. No one actually did lick stamps, but that's a phrase that I use, is, you know, we're not employing people to lick stamps. And then once we've got the buy-in of, you know, one thing, and then that leads on to another and then another, and then you get some momentum and people start to see the benefits. And now we're in a position where probably 80% of the stuff that our people were doing previously, we no longer do, or people no longer do it. A robot does it, or a system does it. And that has, you know, vast number of benefits. You know, there's no longer a direct correlation between revenue and cost. So that has huge benefits. But also, you know, we're highly focused on what we do, what work. There's no there's no right and wrong way of doing what we do. So we try something. If it works, we know that it works and we keep doing it and we do it more often. But if it fails, we embrace the fact that it's failed and we learn from that and we try not to do it again. So it's been an eye-opening process, and so far, touch veneer, it's going well.
Automation is not exactly a brand new technology. In fact, ask anybody who is currently discussing transformation or in the market for a technology solution as part of their own journey, and you can bet that automation is one of the key technologies that they're looking for. But how important is it to distinguish the difference between automation the trend and automation the reality? Are we guilty of taking the solution first and looking for a problem to solve with it, as opposed to simply having a true business case for automation in the first place?
It's critical, and I think the benefit that we've had as a smaller organization is we're closer to the problems. I'm a great fan of the back to the floor mentality, because the people who are actually doing the stuff and doing the do know what the problems are. And again, in a big organization, you can get so far removed from that that you just carry on doing the same thing, and there's people at the sharp end are feeling the pain. So what we've done is really look under the bonnet as to what are people doing, why are they doing it, how easy is it to do, how often are we getting it wrong because somebody's cut and pasting information out of one system into another system, and addresses are getting cut off, so letters are getting returned to sender because nobody intentionally makes that mistake, but this stuff happens. Or we're not checking company's house and something hasn't been changed correctly, and we've got under the bonnet, but that is time consuming, and that has been the biggest eye-opener. That takes determination and drive and perseverance, because there is no quick win in this stuff. If you've got to do it properly, and I've seen in some of my customers' organizations where they have bought an automated product to fix a problem, and what they've done is created a different problem. Quite luckily for me, we have a solution to that second problem, so we're going to feel the benefit. But and it's the example I'm thinking about is around planning. So there's some quite sophisticated tools on the market that will do network planning. But in the old way of doing it, somebody would walk the route. Somebody would have a look. Oh, that looks like a problem delivery. That's a private road. And by removing that, they're saving up problems for downstream. And I think that is one danger of the drive to automation. Unless you fully understand the end-to-end process, something's going to get missed, and that is going to cost you more than you're saving.
The case for automation seems something of a no-brainer. There's a reason that it's a continuously trending technology after all. But as with any technology, there's always going to be fears, obstacles, and a million reasons as to why an organization just hasn't made the jump to implementation yet. And for those that have started their automation journeys, how much are they narrowing their application of the technology? We know, after all, that automation is primarily used for data capture and analysis, but what more can automation do for their business that even they haven't considered?
People are reluctant to change, and some people are more reluctant than others. So you have to quite quickly be able to demonstrate and articulate the benefits. Back in the Industrial Revolution, people were burning down mills because, they there was a perception that everybody was going to get made redundant by the loom or whatever it might have been at the time. So, but if you can demonstrate to people the benefits and take them on that journey, I think that they'll embrace it. And we've got a couple of examples. We've got a couple of individuals who like doing the same thing regularly, and it's taken a little while, but we've taken them with us, and they're now at the point of saying, actually, I want to give that a go. I'd like to do this. I'd like to. And it's quite refreshing and eye opening to see that change in people, because I love change. I like doing things differently. I take that on board, but I do appreciate that I'm probably rarer than most. There's a lot of people that just want to do the same job. They want to come in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They want to do exactly the same today as they did yesterday. And I want to go home at five. And, you know, you have to accept that that's, you know, that's human nature. There are people with that mindset. I think cost is definitely, and the scale, and also, you know, as an owner of an organization, I'm in this for the long term. So, and I think people's career paths are quite, you know, the amount of time people spend in a role, you know, seems to be reducing year on year. So I think people are reluctant to commit to a longer term project because they, you know, I'm going to stay here for 2 years, 3 years, and I'm, you know, I'm going to go up the next rung on the ladder and I'm going to move on and I'm going to get a bigger salary. It's, you know, I'm fortunate I'm not in that position because I 50% owner of the company. So I'm committing the long term. So I think that is a big hurdle. And also in big organizations, you know, it's about the empowerment of the people that are doing it. You know, I mentioned it before, the back to the floor concept. You know, that I've worked in big organizations where there's some bizarre behaviors and you try and challenge them and you just get lost in the noise. So it's empowering people, that mindset. And I do think that's, you know, back to the reference about GB Cycling, you know, there was fantastic support in place and there was, you know, some of the greatest coaches in the world, some of the greatest equipment. But ultimately, it came down to the riders, and the riders have to take responsibility for what they are going to deliver, which ultimately is winning a cycle race. And it's about putting the mechanisms and the processes and the support in place to drive that. And that's what hopefully we do at Trenches, about putting things in place so that the people that are going out negotiating with freeholders or, you know, having the telephone conversations with housing associations or building developers, they feel empowered. They've got the tools at their fingertips that they can be as effective as you possibly can. Data is critical. So that is critical, but it also, if you've got that certainty around and repeatability, it frees, once you've got it cracked, it frees you up. So you've got more headspace to think about the other things. And you can, you know, the prime example that I use is our biggest customer. We, getting the bill out every month was a monumental task. You know, we had, you know, two or three people working on it for a couple of days just to get a bill out. And now that happens. I just push a button and it works. You know, the reporting that I do with my customers, again, that was probably, you know, a whole day's work for somebody to build the reporting pack, to get the data. Then it's another day to do the interpretation of that data and what are our recommendations. You know, and we're doing this on a monthly basis. And so somebody's probably spending a week every month per customer doing stuff that now, you know, we do it the night before, we print it out, I check it, and we have a valuable conversation. So that week of time is spent having a conversation about how we improve things, not let's just get the data. Yeah. So the data is critical, but having that data, it's what you can do with it and then what it frees you up to do. And you know, not necessarily what is just going well, it's what's going wrong. Mm. So, yeah, and it's, you know, fail fast is a phrase I hear a lot, but it's, you know, we'll try. So I hate to use the word failure, but it's try. If it works, do it again. If it doesn't work, move on. Do something different.
When looking at digital transformation, in an industry such as the telecommunications sector, there is and there always will be an interesting market dynamic, the larger incumbent versus the smaller disruptor. But as we've seen throughout the last two decades, some of the biggest change and disruption has actually come from those smaller players, and the incumbents can no longer rely on legacy. So does this mean it's easier and far less of a risk for those smaller companies to make radical changes through automation?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's easier. I think it's just different. So, you know, we're a small organization. I think we're currently at 25 people. You know, a year ago we were at, you know, 12 or 13. taking me out of the business has a material impact on our efficiency, whereas a big organization can absorb that. And also, you know, if we get it wrong in a small organization, it could be disastrous for us. So I think, I don't think it's necessarily easier or more difficult. It's just different, different challenges. The momentum is definitely with the disruptors, and I think that can only be positive. And I also think, you know, we've all had a pretty awful last year in terms of lockdowns and COVID, but I think that is forcing people to think differently. You know, we haven't got huge, great, you know, chrome glass tower blocks for our people, but you know, if we did, we quite quickly wouldn't have. And I think, you know, some of the steps that we put in the very early days about, you know, cloud-based services, IP-based telephony systems, all of those things, we transitioned, you know, over a weekend from having everybody in the office to everybody being at home. And we pretty much didn't miss a heartbeat. It worked seamlessly. But I think we were in the rarities, I think, you know, the bigger the organization, the more difficult that is, primarily from a cost perspective. So I do think the incumbents are going to steal a march, and the disruptors are going to steal a march on the incumbents, and they're going to be forced. They have to wake up and reinvent what they're doing.
Transformation and change is easier said than done. While we are indeed more digitally enabled than ever before, a transformation journey and implementing automation technology is not something that a CTO can deliver overnight. Looking at Team GB Cycling, who are indeed world leaders in their sport, their success didn't happen as soon as it was decided that change was needed. They followed a rigorous, marginal gains philosophy, examining every aspect of performance to extract small advantages, which collectively add up to a decisive winning margin. So what can CTOs learn from Team GB Cycling's blueprint for success?
I think it's the relentless focus on improvement in every single thing you do. And it doesn't necessarily have to be big, shiny, fantastic, cost a fortune. You know, if you're focused on the outcomes and you've got determination, and the bit that springs to mind is Team GB track racing. They know they've broken the world record in training. They know what they need to do. And the technology they used was a rolled up towel on the side of the track, and the coach would either stand in front of it or behind it based upon how they, you know, a towel and a guy standing has changed the outcome of that race. So it does. You don't have to spend a fortune. You don't have to spend an age on it. You can make very, very small, simple changes that bring a fantastic outcome.
So what do you think? Do you believe that CTOs could adopt the marginal gains philosophy when it comes to successfully navigating an automation journey? Will you look to make small incremental improvements across your business, adding up to a significant improvement when they're all added together? Let us know in the comments below.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Insight Podcast in association with theinterface.net and cpostrategy.com. The Digital Insight is brought to you by B2E Media Limited. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate and review. And don't forget to check out our podcast archive at www.b2e-media.com/thedigitalinsight.